All right, welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're going deep on a legal idea that's kind of fascinating, really powerful, but honestly rarely used in the world of bankruptcy. It's substantive consolidation.
Oh yeah, this is it's a big one.
Yeah, it's almost like a nuclear option, like a total reset button for when you've got a whole group of companies in trouble. But it's not something courts just like throw around lightly.
Right. Definitely not a casual thing. And the case that really, I think, drew the lines in the sand, set the limits on when you can actually push that button, is in Re Owens Corning, a real landmark case.
Yeah, spot on. So for anyone out there really getting into bankruptcy law, substantive consolidation basically means you're treating a whole bunch of companies legally separate, like they were just one big entity, all for the purposes of the bankruptcy, of course.
Right.
So imagine like a parent company with all its subsidiaries. Suddenly, boom, all their assets, all their debts, everything's just pooled together.
Yeah, it's a huge shift.
And the real kicker is that now creditors of any one of those companies, they can potentially go after the assets of any of the others, even if originally they had no claim on that specific subsidiary.
That's where things get really interesting, yeah.
Yeah, it really challenges that whole foundational idea of corporations being separate legal entities. And Owens Corning, as we'll see, became kind of the battleground for when that's actually permissible.
It's a case about, I think, the very core of why we even have separate corporate structures and what creditors should reasonably expect when a company's facing bankruptcy. Big questions.
Absolutely. So to understand why this case was such a big deal, we got to rewind a bit back to like the late 90s, early 2000s. Owens Corning, massive name in building materials. They got hit hard by, well, a tidal wave is the only way to put it, of asbestos litigation.
Yeah, a classic example of those long-tail liabilities coming back to bite.
Exactly. And that's what drove them to file for Chapter 11 back in 2000. But there's a big financial piece to this story, too, running alongside all that litigation.
Right. Can't forget about that. Just a few years before the bankruptcy, 1997, Owens Corning and some subsidiaries, they took out a loan. Now we're talking a substantial loan, $2 billion. That's with a B.
Wow. And this is where our whole substantive consolidation focus really comes in, right?
Absolutely. Because it wasn't just a loan to Owens Corning, the main company. A bunch of their other subsidiaries, they acted as guarantors on that debt.
Oh, so like co-signers on a regular loan, kinda?
Exactly. If the main borrowers couldn't pay, the subsidiaries were on the hook, legally obligated to step up.
So the banks, you said Credit Suisse First Boston was leading that. They weren't just relying on Owens Corning to recover. They had claims directly against those subsidiaries, too.
Oh, absolutely. That's a huge difference. They weren't just general unsecured creditors hoping for the best. They had that extra layer of security, those guarantees, and that gave them a much stronger position, a much more direct claim on specific assets.
So the banks built in a safety net, basically.
You got it.
And then comes the strategic move by Owens Corning. As part of their whole bankruptcy reorganization, they went to the court and said, "Hey, we want substantive consolidation." They wanted to consolidate the entities that actually borrowed the money along with those subsidiaries that had guaranteed the loans.
So essentially, they were trying to blur the lines.
Exactly. Treat them all as one big entity, and the guarantees, those valuable guarantees the banks had fought for, they'd just poof, disappear.
And the banks, instead of having that secured position, they'd get knocked down to just general unsecured creditors, lumped in with everyone else that Owens Corning owed money to.
Yeah, so suddenly their sure thing became a lot riskier. And this is the part I think that's so instructive. It's not just about this one loan, right? It's about the court saying bankruptcy is not a way to just undo legitimate business deals, to get out of contracts and obligations.
No, absolutely. It's not a free pass to rewrite history just because you're in financial trouble.
And of course, the banks, they were not having it. They went to battle over this.
Oh, yeah. This sparked a major legal fight, went all the way up to the appeals court.
And you can imagine, right, the bankruptcy court, they initially sided with Owens Corning, approved of the consolidation. District court upheld that. But the banks, they weren't giving up their guarantees that easily.
Nope. They appealed, took it to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. And that's where things get really interesting for bankruptcy law.
Yeah, that ruling's had a lasting impact. So the Third Circuit, they step in, they say, "Hold up. This is going too far." They reversed the lower courts, saying this application of substantive consolidation, it undermines some really core principles. And in doing so, they lay out this framework, a two-prong test. And that test's now used to determine when is this actually justified?
Yeah, this two-prong test, it's the heart of Owens Corning. Anyone studying bankruptcy, this is essential stuff. It's a structured way to think about when it's okay, when it's actually appropriate to disregard the separate legal existence of companies in a bankruptcy. So lay it on us. What are the two prongs?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so prong one, it's looking backward. Before the bankruptcy, did these companies disregard their own separateness so much that creditors really relied on them being like one big unit?
So it's about how they actually operated, right? Hmm. Did they act so much like one entity that creditors could reasonably believe they were dealing with one company, not separate ones? That could be shared management, finances all mixed together, blurring the lines of their operations, even how they presented themselves to the public.
Exactly. And then prong two, this one looks forward to after the bankruptcy's filed.
Right.
Here, consolidation might be okay if things have gotten so messed up, the assets and liabilities of all these companies, if they're so intertwined that trying to untangle them would be ridiculously expensive. Like, so expensive it actually hurt all the creditors, make it harder for anyone to recover anything.
Yeah, so it recognizes there might be situations where it's just a practical necessity. The costs of separating everything would outweigh any benefit. In those rare cases, doing it all together, consolidation might be the least bad option.
Makes sense. So, with those two prongs in mind, what happened before, what's the situation after? Let's look at how the Third Circuit applied this to Owens Corning. And spoiler alert, it didn't go well for the company.
Yeah, let's break it down.
Starting with prong one, did they disregard their separateness before bankruptcy? And did the banks rely on them being one big unit?
Well, the court looked at the evidence and said, nope, not really. The subsidiaries, they kept their own books, their own records, they had different operations, they followed the usual corporate formalities. On paper and in how they were structured, they were separate.
And here's the clincher. The court pointed to the loan agreement itself. That $2 billion loan, the agreement actually had these things called covenants in it.
Right, a covenants, those are like promises, conditions the borrower has to meet as part of the deal.
So in this case, promises to keep those subsidiaries separate. The banks basically said, we'll lend you this money, but you got to promise to keep those subsidiaries distinct, financially sound. That shows the banks weren't assuming it was all one big pot of money. They specifically structured the deal based on the companies staying separate.
Yeah, that's huge. Those separateness covenants totally undermined Owens Corning's argument, showed the banks knew exactly what was what, and they were relying on those companies being legally and financially distinct.
So prong one failed. Now, what about prong two, the argument that after bankruptcy, everything was so hopelessly mixed up, they had to consolidate?
The court wasn't buying that either. They said, sure, it's normal for parent companies and subsidiaries to have some transactions between them, some overlap, but it wasn't a total mess, not impossible to sort out, not to the point where it hurt everyone to try and separate things. Basically, complex, yeah, but not hopelessly commingled.
And there's this great quote from the court's opinion that sums it up. They said the consolidation was a deemed fiction, not a practical necessity.
Love that.
Meaning, it wasn't because things were really that tangled. It was a legal strategy to change things up, to try and get out of those guarantees.
Exactly. The court saw right through it. They called it an offensive maneuver, something to give Owens Corning an advantage, not a defensive move to fix a real problem.
And this gets to the core of why the Third Circuit made this ruling. They were protecting creditors, making sure deals are upheld. The banks negotiated those guarantees. That was part of the bargain.
Absolutely.
Letting Owens Corning just erase that through some legal trickery, that'd be unfair. Yeah. It'd undermine contracts, shake the foundations of corporate law.
Judge Ambrose, who wrote the opinion, he even said this could cause chaos in the marketplace. Imagine lenders not being able to trust corporate structures, not being able to rely on guarantees. That'd have huge implications.
Yeah, it goes way beyond this one case. The court was saying, if we allow this kind of deemed consolidation, where we pretend things are different just for the bankruptcy plan, and it hurts creditors, that's a dangerous precedent.
And they made a distinction, right? This wasn't an actual merger of the companies. They weren't combining everything for real. This was just for the purpose of paying off debts in the bankruptcy. And the court said, that's not okay.
So for all the law students listening, what are the big takeaways from Owens Corning? Why is this case still relevant today?
Well, first off, it's a huge win for creditor protection. The court's saying, we're not going to let you use bankruptcy to screw over people you owe money to, especially not if they had valid contracts and guarantees.
It sets a high bar for when you can actually use this consolidation tool. It's not business as usual. It's a last resort.
And future lawyers, take note. Documentation is key. creditors, especially lenders, you got to clearly document that companies are separate and use those covenants in loan agreements to enforce that separation. If bankruptcy happens, those protections can be lifesavers.
Remember those guarantees, that safety net we talked about? Owens Forning tried to cut it and the court said, nope.
And it's important to remember, this was an offensive use of consolidation. There might be times when it's more acceptable, like if there's actual fraud or if things are so unbelievably commingled that separating them would be a disaster. But Owens Corning wasn't like that.
Right. So in Re Owens Corning, the big takeaway is this.
Yeah.
You need to show either a major disregard for separateness before bankruptcy that creditors relied on, or that after bankruptcy, things are so hopelessly mixed up that it's a practical necessity to consolidate. Neither of those was true in this case, so consolidation was denied.
And that ruling's still a cornerstone of bankruptcy law. It reminds us to respect creditors, uphold the idea of separate corporations, and it carefully lays out when you can and when you can't use this powerful tool of consolidation.
A lot to think about. So for our listeners, as you keep learning about bankruptcy, think about this. How do the Owens Corning principles apply to today's world, where companies are structured in all sorts of complex ways, and we've got all these new types of financing? It's a question that keeps coming up.
And maybe in a future deep dive, we can look at how Owens Corning has been applied in other cases, or how courts have made distinctions. But until then, keep learning, keep exploring.
Thanks for joining the deep dive. Catch you next time.